You are listening to Ask the CIO, sponsored by Symantec and DLT Solutions. Now, here's your host, Jason Miller.
My guest is Chuck Elmore, the Chief Information Officer of the Air Force Office of Special Investigations. I'm your host, Jason Miller. Now, Chuck, before break, we talked about your background and how you support the Office of Special Investigations as the CIO. Let's just talk about the makeup of your office real quick, federal employees, contractors, and, of course, a lot of vendors listen to my show, so they want to know what your IT budget is.
In the immediate CIO office, I've got about 60 employees. It's a mixture of some OSI agents, interestingly enough. I've got a professional staff that consists of military officers, military enlisted, and civil service. In addition to the folks that work directly for me, we have another 30 employees in what we call the field support squadron. And these are the guys in the field that are actually, you know, working on servers, solving issues, building network connections, and this type of thing. Most of those folks are located at four what we call operating locations around the world. Those are in Norfolk, San Antonio. We have an office in Germany and in Korea. They are out there helping the folks in those. Their area of responsibility, I guess, are those surrounding areas. In addition to that, we have approximately 30 contractors that are here supporting the four networks that we operate. We operate one unclassified network and three classified networks. Our operations and maintenance budget to do this is around $10.5 million per year.
All right, so decent budget, and obviously it's interesting that it seems to be such a small amount of people for having, I think you said something like 240 locations around the world, yet you only have 30 people in the field. But I understand just by where people are located, they move with the clock. So as it becomes night in the U.S., it becomes day in Germany or day in Korea, so then those people can help others. That's the whole theory behind it, that why you have those, where you have people located as well.
Yes. Here in the Russell Knox building at Quantico, we have a help desk, but we're only open Monday through Friday daytime hours. But the offices around the globe also help us. As the sun moves, the folks around the office around the world help us answer those phone calls when they need to.
Well, let's jump in and talk a little bit about your priorities. What are you hoping to get done over the next 6 or 9 months?
This is the fun part. These are the things that I enjoy doing the most about this job is delivering new capability and trying to make it easier on those investigators and analysts out in the field doing their jobs. So I've got several to cover here. First, we have an ongoing effort to consolidate the stovepipe systems. And what I'm trying to do is right now as I'm sure many other federal government agencies are doing the same thing. I'm trying to get away from passing data back and forth using spreadsheets and briefing slides, and consolidate into a single database with the appropriate workflow built around it, so that when I enter data and track data, I only have to do it once. And I can reuse that data for budget purposes. I can use it for daily execution purposes. I can build it for manpower, planning purposes, or whatever need. I only have to store the data once. So that is one of our key efforts we have going on right now. It's going to be a multi-year project. We've selected two modules to implement to kick this off, and then it's going to be a multi-year project because we're going to have probably the next 4 to 5 years, I'll bring in additional stovepipe systems, and as we do that, I'll bring that data in and the workflows in as well. So in the end, my goal is in 4 to 5 years to have a single database with our manpower resources, our budget resources, our logistics. Pretty much everything we needed to run the headquarters data-wise will be in this single system. So that's the first effort we have. Right now, as I mentioned earlier, we're located at about 240 locations around the world. About 20% of those are on what's called the Air Force Network, which is a single integrated network that the Air Force has worldwide. The rest of the 80% are kind of tunneled through that Air Force network, and I'm still responsible for O&M-ing, maintaining, and replacing switches and routers and all that network equipment to keep that tunneled network up and running. And so what we're trying to do is push to get that taken down, basically collapse our network on those bases into the bases network so that I can take advantage of the local support staff that's working on the various Air Force bases around the world, rather than me trying to do it centrally from here at Quantico or at the four operating locations we have. And it's it's posing it's a challenge, but we're making progress. And I think 9 months to a year from now, we should be pretty much completely off of this old legacy OSI network that we had, and we should be riding the same network infrastructure that everybody else on the base is using. Third one, Windows 10 implementation. So we're working with the Air Force CIO's office, General Bender's office, and Air Force Space Command to bring Windows 10 into our environment. We need to do that as efficiently as possible. We have a significant number of workstations that will not take the Windows 10 build as DoD has directed it be installed. It just simply won't take it. And trying to do that as efficiently and effectively as possible is posing to be a challenge, but we're in lockstep with senior Air Force leaders in the Pentagon and out of Space Command to do that. We don't really have any OSI-specific cloud initiatives that we're working, although the Air Force is working an Air Force-wide enterprise cloud solution, and we are in touch with them on a biweekly basis, and we're staying on top of what that initiative is. And I fully intend to move and migrate to that cloud environment as soon as the Air Force has it available. That I do believe there are some tremendous amount of efficiencies that can be gained from that, but I don't really see any efficiencies that if I were to step out, OSI were to step out ourselves and try to solve that problem, I think we're better off and more bang for the buck if we wait on the Air Force and go in lockstep with big Air Force. And lastly, this is one that's real interesting. We've rolled out back in about a year ago. We started rolling out what we call the Agent Mobile Device. And essentially, what it is, it's a tablet computer running the standard Air Force Windows desktop. But we've included some law enforcement investigative specific applications. And the goal of this device is for the agent that's in the field, when he gets called out to a crime scene, he takes his tablet with him. And on there was all, like I say, again, is all these applications. There's crime scene investigation software. There's crime scene sketching software. There's composite sketching software. There's software on there and applications for building a database of forensic material or evidence. And I'll tell you, the agents love it. They want more. So we are continuing to roll that project out. And probably another year or so, we'll have all the agents in the field that are doing crime scene investigations outfitted with one of these Agent Mobile devices. And, of course, wearing the CIO hat, I have to have the efficiency hat on as well. And so what we're doing is these devices are pretty powerful. And so we're actually removing their desktops and laptops. And so this is a single device. So the agent comes into the office any morning. He sticks it in a docking station, and it's his office computer. When he goes on a crime scene, he takes it out of the docking station. He carries it with him. When he goes home in the evening or has to go on a trip or travel or something, he takes it with him there as well. So it's a single unclassified device that takes the place of what he used to have as a desktop and a traveling laptop, and he uses it for all those purposes. Like I said, that one's been a real success, and I look forward to being able to complete that project this fiscal year.
All right, lot going on. There's plenty to talk about, but I'm going to start back at the beginning when you talk about getting rid of stovepipe systems, creating maybe a database. Are we talking about kind of a data warehouse, or what are you talking about when you say consolidated single database?
Not necessarily data warehouse, but it gets some of the stuff into a database. Today, so much of what we do really just lives in spreadsheets or PowerPoint briefings, and that's the only source for that information. And we may be talking about budgetary information. We might be talking about inventories of equipment or other logistics.
So what you're talking about here is really the back office things, the data that's used, as you said, to make decisions to help the commander or the help the Office of Special Investigations do their kind of daily work. That's, you know, it's part of the mission, but it's not the mission-centric data.
Exactly. Our mission-centric data is actually stored in an investigative case file management system. That's the system that our agents are in the field every day, you know, entering case file information where they went and interviewed somebody, or they open a case when a crime occurs, or they close a case when one's been completed. And so it's not that data. It's not the OSI mission. This is all the support data on the back end that keeps the command running. That data is what I'm talking about.
And do you foresee putting, for instance, data analytic tools on top of it? It sounds like you guys probably have a big data problem or a big data challenge, I should say, on the back end and the front end, because I'm sure some of the investigators and analysts would love to have some big data tools if they already don't.
Absolutely. We have some analytic tools that we use on our case file management system, and there's no reason in the world why that those same set of tools can't be used to map investigations and cases to the back-end infrastructure that it takes to support those things. A lot of times when we have to answer questions to leadership, it's very difficult. We've got the data in the on the cases themselves, but we can't necessarily map that data to what it takes on the back end to support those cases. How much money does it take? How many people does it take to run a case? Those kinds of things, it's difficult to do now because this data is scattered all over the place. And like I say, and many times it's just sitting in a spreadsheet or a set of briefing slides, and no one else knows where that data is or how to access it other than the immediate team that's working it.
I know, a common problem with a lot of agencies. Chuck, let's take a quick break, and when we come back, we can talk more about your priorities. My guest is Chuck Elmore, the Chief Information Officer of the Air Force Office of Special Investigations. I'm your host, Jason Miller.
You are listening to Ask the CIO, sponsored by Symantec and DLT Solutions on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. You are listening to Ask the CIO, sponsored by Symantec and DLT Solutions. Now, here's your host, Jason Miller.
My guest is Chuck Elmore, the Chief Information Officer of the Air Force Office of Special Investigations. I'm your host, Jason Miller. Now, Chuck, before break, you went through your laundry list of priorities going to keep you busy for well more than another year. We talked about one of those, which is the consolidation of stovepipe systems. Another one you mentioned also was really collapsing some of the networks that you're responsible for into the Air Force network. You said about 20% is done, another 80% to go. So that means you probably know what you're doing a little bit. So how do you get to that other 80%? What's your challenge?
Some of the challenges center around the actual network equipment. When I that's on the bases, when I ran my own network, I selected a particular brand of switches and routers, and the base may have chosen a different set of switches and routers or different brand name. And so it's not as easy as just me turning over that switch or that router to the base to let them begin to maintain. We may actually have to replace it. I may have to upgrade it, or just it's not compatible with what the base has, so we may have to replace it. That's part of the challenge. But probably the primary challenge is the way it works today. Although I'm physically sitting on that base, all trouble tickets and all computer problems and printer problems and file server problems and those kinds of things all get routed back to OSI because we're on that private network that tunnels through the base's network, and the local base comm squadron really can't. There's nothing they can do for me. They don't have access to my part of the network. Once we collapse this network, we basically hand over our local staff, all of the investigators and analysts and folks that are in the field, to the local base for them to now become the maintainer for those folks. So in the future, once they turn the switch and you're now operating on a local base, when an individual has a problem, one of our individuals has a problem, he picks up the phone and calls the local base's help desk staff. So to them, it looks like, to the local base, we're a new body of people that they've never had to concern themselves with before. So, and in the world of, you know, tight resources, every tenant on the base, you know, drives a manpower or part of a manpower bill back to the comm squadron. So we're getting a little bit of pushback on some of our larger installations where we may have 50 to 100 people. We're getting some pushback. A lot of it, as we're finding out as we dig through this, is not that they don't want to do it. It's that they don't understand it, and they don't understand what it is that we do and what we will bring to them when we collapse this network. So it's an education problem. Once we get past that, things seem to go pretty good. So it's just a matter of continuing to educate the local base comm squadrons, and we're already seeing this kind of pick up speed. So I suspect within the next 9 months to a year, we'll probably be at 80 to 90%.
Do you get a sense from that initial 20% how much money this will save you guys, or how much more efficient you guys can become because of not having to tunnel through the network anymore?
Just on rough numbers, just the switches themselves. So this is the switches, the piece of equipment that all the local workstations will plug into. And switch around $15,000 at 150 bases is about $2.25 million, and that's $2.25 million in equipment that I will no longer have to operate, maintain, and replace And because more than likely what we'll do on that, most cases we're pretty small as far as the numbers of people. We will just attach directly to a switch that's already on the base, or the switch that we have to buy will cost much less than that in order to ride on the FNET. And the local base will take over the O&M of that equipment. So it's not like I'm tossing all $2.25 million back to the bases. In many cases, I actually reduce the amount of equipment that has to be maintained. Second of all, the bases already have the help desk staff and 5 to 10 or 15 more people to take care of is not going to drive a manpower bill. But yet on my side, I can actually reduce manpower because I'll be doing away with that capability. And so I will see a manpower reduction, and I do not believe foresee in any case that the local bases will actually see an increase in manpower.
And I know we may talk about workforce a little bit later in the program, but one thing about when you're able to reduce manpower, you're not really getting rid of people. You're moving them from one priority to another one, maybe a mission one, maybe this database consolidation effort. So I think that becomes a big lift for you guys to get other priorities done. Is that the way you're thinking?
Absolutely. One of my desires when I got here was to try as best I could to get out of the day-to-day maintenance of what I call the IT plumbing, which is the file servers and the email servers and the web servers and those kind of things that just kind of sit there and run every day and take care of the basic needs of our customers. I want to spend more time and spend more resources working directly with the law enforcement and counterintelligence workforce that we have to drive efficiencies and help them do their job and get away from I wouldn't call it mundane work of taking care of the plumbing, but that's kind of what it is. I want my folks focused on the mission-specific requirements that our command has and less on the maintenance of file servers and email servers.
One other priority you mentioned that falls in that same line is around Windows 10 implementation. I know there was a memo signed out by Deputy Secretary Work just in the last couple months, and I know every CIO we talk to in the DoD is really focused on this. You said that you're down that path, but you may have some challenges. Talk about where you see some challenges around Windows 10 migration.
The DoD's implementation of Windows 10 is not like the implementation of Windows 10 that we've all seen and experienced on our home networks where, you know, your computer pops up and says, hey, why don't you move to Windows 10? You click a button, and an hour later, you come back, and Windows 10 is now up and running, and all of your data got transitioned, and life is good, and it's all working as advertised. The DoD's implementation of Windows 10 is using is going to be implemented with what's called Credential Guard, which brings in a whole new ball game when it comes to how we operate or how we administer and use workstations in the Department of Defense. It's much more secure. However, the BIOS settings and basically the hardware and BIOS level software on the workstations that we've typically bought through the years, a lot of it will not support Windows 10, will not support the Credential Guard capability of Windows 10. Also, in some cases, I don't have specific instances of this, but we also know that Windows 10 with Credential Guard will not work on most, if not all, current virtual desktop implementations across the DoD. So wherever I've got a virtual desktop implementation, we may have to look at either waiving the requirements to allow that to continue to work, or potentially switch from a virtual desktop back to a full, you know, hard client desktop in order to be able to implement the security requirements of Windows 10. Right now, I don't know what the numbers are, but I've heard some numbers around, you know, 50 to 70% of the inventory of computers currently out there in the Air Force won't take Windows 10. So therefore, that means a full refresh. And a refresh of 50% or 50 to 70% of your inventory is a significant bill. And how do we pay that bill? And how do we meet the mandate to be on Windows 10 by January 2017 is a challenge. And rather than OSI and the rest of the Air Force's major commands and agencies, rather than going out on our own and just doing a one-for-one replacement, We are trying to look at this problem as an Air Force enterprise-wide problem and come up with smarter solutions than just doing these one-for-one replacements. So that's the big challenge, is how do we move? Once we know the how, then the implementation part becomes a little easier.
It's interesting that it won't work with some VDI implementations. Do you get a sense why? Because it seems like so many people have been moving to VDI over the last 3, 4, 5 years, you think would be a logical move. And I know it's not all Windows 10. It's the specific piece you talked about, the credentialing piece.
It's absolutely the credentialing piece. It's my understanding, and I'm a long ways from being a technical expert at this, but from what I've heard is that the operating system, in order for Credential Guard to operate properly or to even be configured and operate at all, that particular operating system has to do what's called own the hardware. It has to have complete control of the hardware rather than have an abstraction layer in the middle that allows it to work in a virtual environment. It actually has to physically own that hardware. So if you've got a VDI solution where you've got 2, 3, or 4 workstations up and running at the same time, well, only one of them can own the hardware. So that's the challenge. The security that it brings in is because it is allowed to own and completely manage that hardware. That's the same problem, or the benefit, I guess, or the advantage that you get with having Windows 10 with Credential Guard on is also works against this idea of an abstraction layer that separates the hardware from the operating system, which is what allows virtual desktop environments to operate.
And it's interesting because, you know, virtual environments have been talked about as being more secure. You can send a patch out and get it done very quickly. And now here's this other challenge that comes up. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we can finish out your priorities. My guest today is Chuck Elmore, the Chief Information Officer of the Air Force Office of Special Investigations. I'm your host, Jason Miller.
You are listening to Ask the CIO, sponsored by Symantec and DLT Solutions on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. You are listening to Ask the CIO, sponsored by Symantec and DLT Solutions. Now here's your host, Jason Miller.
My guest today is Chuck Elmore, the Chief Information Officer of the Air Force Office of Special Investigations. I'm your host, Jason Miller. Now, Chuck, we were talking about a lot of your priorities. One last one I wanted to touch upon was mobility. Now, this was a very interesting one you talked about earlier a little bit, and I'd like to get into a little more details. Moving out with tablets, and not just any tablet, but it seems like heavy tablets, if you will, that are good enough to serve as a computer back at the office, but also work really well out in the field. What kind of tablets are we looking at here? It sounds like Windows tablets, that'd be my guess, because I'm not sure iPads are quite there yet. But talked about that, and then how many people are using those tablets right now, and how many people will eventually use them?
They are heavy tablets, absolutely. We looked at trying to test an Android or an iOS solution, but within the Air Force, there are pretty strict rules to being able to standing up pilot tests for things like that, and I needed something that I could get on the network quickly. And and these pilot tests tend to drag on, and a lot of accreditation paperwork and studies and this type of thing has to be done. And to be quite honest with you, I don't have the resources to be able to do that. So what we decided to do early on in this project was just go with the operating system that the Air Force had approved, and we would find a hardware solution that would meet it. And fortunately enough, the Air Force, under their AFWAY contract, they have plenty of tablets to choose from, and they meet our needs. So we essentially buy whatever the Air Force puts on what's called their QEB, which is it used to be stand for quarterly enterprise buy. I think it's changed, but essentially they, about once a quarter or a couple times a year, they will refresh and bring on new contract awarded and bring in on new technologies. And we just buy whatever that, as long as it meets a specific set of requirements. And so far, all the devices they've had since we've started this rollout have met or exceeded all of our requirements. So it's not that it's a really unique setup. It's just mainly that it has the applications needed to help an investigator in the field do his work, and in a form factor that he can carry around pretty easy, not have to lug a workstation or a laptop out to the field. He can bring a tablet with a portable keyboard if he needs it. Has a portable printer and portable scanners and those types of things where he could actually sit in his vehicle or sit anywhere under a shade tree at the crime scene if he needs to, and do his work without having to wait for the day to end and come back to the office and enter his information there. And these things are pretty powerful. I mean, these are i5 and i7 Intel processor machines with fairly substantial sized hard drives in them, or I guess they're SSD drives. And they do everything that they need in the field, as well as are very robust machines back in the office when they drop it in the docking station and have to do their daily operations from the office. They work just as well for that.
How do you deal with the Wi-Fi or the need for connection issue? Wi-Fi may not be secure enough from a cyber perspective, so maybe cellular. How do you deal with that connection issue?
On ours, we don't put any broadband capability within the machines, because I'm sending these things all over the world, and I don't know where one of these machines may end up. And you know, as you well know, around the United States and also overseas, some locations, AT&T wireless may have a better connection than a Verizon or T-Mobile or that kind of thing. So what we do is we send the devices out with just Wi-Fi, and then our local detachments will purchase whatever kind of mobile Wi-Fi hotspot that they need. And we're also, for our telephone devices, our cell phones, we use iPhones. And on there, we enable the mobile hotspot capability. And that's very, very cheap. So we have an individual in the field with an iPhone, and he enables the Wi-Fi hotspot. We connect to that from the tablet, and then we can do a virtual private network connection back to the network, back to our network, and back here to the servers that they need access to at Quantico. And so far, that has worked quite well for us. And that way, it is very flexible using the hotspots. I can take those things anywhere, and I don't have to worry about the local broadband being an issue.
You mentioned the CAT card and credentials. The one thing that we've reported on just recently within the DoD is a move to something called the derived credential. I know this is maybe a little bit outside of what your day-to-day work is, but has the Air Force or have you guys started to have that conversation about using derived credentials where you don't necessarily have to put a card in a reader, but it's just somehow it's connected between you, the person, the computer, and the network?
We are staying in tune with that, but on our agent mobile devices, we've not taken the leap to do that yet. These devices that we have CAC readers built into them. In fact, the one we're using right now happens to be a Fujitsu device, has a slot in the back of the device, and I mean, it literally does not take up any room at all. The back of the screen kind of has a slot in it, and you slide it in, so you don't see anything sticking out, or it's just really hidden nicely behind the on the bottom of the tablet. And so it's not really an inconvenience. And until derived credentials becomes more prevalent and the rule set is much more well defined, I'm not looking to move to that technology. Now, we're using it on our iPhones. We use the Good Mobile application to do email and our calendaring on our iPhones. But in that, we use derived credentials to there, so we can receive and send encrypted emails. But we're avoiding it right now on the agent mobile devices until those policies are better defined.
Very good, very good. It's good to see you're using them. I know it's something, again, a lot of agencies are looking at. Chuck, we're almost out of time. Before I let you go, I know a lot of vendors listen to my show, so what should they know about working with your office?
I'm very open to talking with vendors. I love having vendors come in, and I certainly don't have time to be out there investigating all these new capabilities that seem to be popping up all the time, so I enjoy having vendors come in. I generally start with a phone call just to see what they have, and if this is of any interest. If it is, the door down here is open, and I've had many, many vendors come in for visits and show us the technologies they have and how they could benefit OSI. One thing to know is that we do follow all Air Force contracting guidelines as far as mandatory sources. So we are a big user of the NetSense 2 contract and also the AFWAI contract vehicles that are Air Force-wide IDIQ-type contracts. So as long as we can talk about those two contracting vehicles, I'm open to all conversations with vendors.
All right. Now, don't blame me when your phone starts ringing off the hook. Sounds like you have plenty going on, but we could talk longer. But unfortunately, we are out of time. My guest has been Chuck Elmore, the Chief Information Officer of the Air Force Office of Special Investigations. Chuck, thank you so much for taking the time to join us.
Jason, thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to Ask the CIO, sponsored by Symantec and DLT Solutions. The entire show is available on demand on federalnewsradio.com. Search Ask CIO.